Welcome to The Mental Breakdown, where we tackle all issues related to mental health, mental illness, parenting, schooling, relationships, and everything in between. While Drs. Bernie and Richard will provide the most up-to-date ideas and perspectives, the information provided in this podcast is not a substitute for medical care. Our goal here at The Mental Breakdown is to provide you with information to help you make your life the best you can be. So without further ado, here's Dr. Bernie and Dr. Richard. Welcome to episode 30 of The Mental Breakdown. I'm Dr. Bernie.
And I'm Dr. Richard.
Richard, this is our first afternoon podcast.
Right. Seems so strange doing this in the afternoon.
There's so much activity going on here in the office, and so it's a little distracting. You may hear some sounds in the background from people walking up and down the hallway or doing different things outside. So
that's right. The office will be a little busier today than it is early Friday morning.
Right. Okay. Right. But that's okay. And because it's also in the afternoon, that's why we're running a few minutes late. We were running a little bit behind with some patients that we were working with and stuff. So we had tried to get it scheduled at 12:30, but you know, things happen, right, Dr. Marshall?
Okay. What he's trying to be to gently tell everybody is that we're late because I'm late. So I guess I will apologize. Blanket apology to everybody.
No, it's all right. He was with patients and stuff, and of course that comes first. So today's podcast, we have a lot of announcements today.
We do. Well, we should tell, why are we doing this today instead of Friday? Because we're both scheduled for tomorrow.
Yes, we're both scheduled for different workshops tomorrow. You're going to a workshop tomorrow in Tampa.
On gun violence.
On gun violence.
Yep. Which a topic we've discussed here on our podcast.
Right.
And they have some experts coming in, psychiatrists and law, including psychiatrists and law enforcement. And so we wanted to see what they had to add and bring us up to date on that topic. So I'll be going over to Tampa tomorrow to listen to that talk on gun violence.
And then later in the morning, I will be doing a workshop for the public defender's office here in Polk County on doing different types of evaluations and stuff. So we're both busy tomorrow and wouldn't be able to do it. So we thought we would sneak it in on Thursday afternoon. So that's one announcement. That's why we're doing it today.
Right.
We have some other fun excitement.
Some exciting announcements.
Announcements that we're going to talk about near the end of the podcast today. Some new announcements, some new things that we're going to have available, some new adventures, and as Richard loves when I say, new ideas for things that we're going to be doing. So we're looking forward to it, and we hope that you will too. So. But the title of the podcast today is Building Resilience. And the reason that we're talking about that is because there's a lot of talk. Well, I guess it was rooted in the idea that, you know, when we talk about a lot of the testing and stuff that goes on in schools, some of the proponents are not even really proponents of school testing. It's just people who look past testing and say, oh, well, you know, we can't go too easy on kids. We're making kids weak. We're making them this. We're making them that. And one of their arguments is that, you know, it's okay to push kids the way the current testing and the current education system is pushing them because it's going to make them stronger. It's going to make them better. And, you know, one of the things that you and I have talked about a lot is building resilience, and that it's absolutely correct that to build resilience, you have to have struggles. You have to have difficult times to build resilience. But we're going to kind of frame that in a way to where we can talk about what is healthy struggles, what are healthy challenges, versus what the school system's doing and sort of what is happening to a lot of kids now. I mean, if we use that same logic, we could say that kids that grow up in abusive homes should be very resilient because they had those struggles and they should be able to come through it just fine. And we know that that's not true. Mm-hmm. So all struggles aren't good. There are some that build resilience, and that's what we need to foster.
Right. Yeah, I think the important point here is that it's okay to struggle, but the struggle should serve some positive purpose. Struggle for struggle's sake doesn't make any sense. but struggle that makes you stronger, that makes you more resourceful, that makes you more tolerant. Those are the kind of struggles we want children to go through.
Right, right. So why don't we start with talking about what resilience is? And resilience is the idea or the ability to be able to take challenging situations, to take stumbles, to take falls, and then to be able to get back up, to be able to pursue, to keep going, and to not be one who, you know, gives up just at the first sign of challenges or the first sign of problems or obstacles.
Right. You know, it brings to mind, if for those of you who have been following our practice, you'll notice that there's a picture of a tree as our logo, and that's essentially a willow tree. And when we wrote our book, Dr. Burney discussed a story that he had. Where did you hear that story originally? Was that a church or something?
Yeah,
or?
It was my Uncle Michael. He talked about it in one of his sermons when I was growing up, and it was just one that really stuck with me over the years.
And we used it when we wrote our book. It was a couple of years after the hurricanes; those four hurricanes had come through Florida, and the story is that while the oak tree is big and strong and sturdy,
right,
in the face of hurricane force winds, that tree would get toppled.
Right.
Because the roots would get wet and loosen, and the wind would blow the tree over. So even though it was strong and erect, it was easily blown over. Where the willow, which was smaller and thinner, would be moved back and forth, but it was more flexible. It was more resilient. And that's
right.
The first time we really talked about this concept of resilience, and we used the analogy of the oak tree and the willow tree.
Right.
So, and we adopted the willow tree for... as the logo for our private practice, as a symbol of resilience.
Right.
That no matter what, you know, you get up and you do it again.
Right.
You learn how to manage your disappointments and your failures, and you stand up and you start all over again.
Right. Yeah. You know, and that's it's a wonderful analogy, because it's something, especially. Well, depending on where you live, I'm sure that there's similar analogies in different regions. But, you know, it's something where you think of these oak trees as steady and strong and immovable.
Right.
But there will be forces that are stronger than that at times.
That's right.
And in our book, we talked about it from the perspective of parenting.
Right.
And that as parents, we need to be willows. But you're absolutely right. You know, it applies to children as well. We need our children to be flexible and to be able to manage the storms of life and to
right.
be able to get back up and to be able to survive and to keep going. So with that sort of definition of resilience, let's talk a little bit about what builds resilience. And there's a lot of things that happens today that does foster resilience in children. There's also a lot of things that happen in life today that goes against
mm-hmm.
what our ideas of building resilience is. And as we're talking about this, we're going to use some other examples from our book, because I think that they hold true, whether we're talking about parenting or we're just talking about general mental health for our children and our families. So as we've kind of already alluded, you know, one of the things that build resilience are, maybe counterintuitively, is struggles.
Right.
We have to have difficult times in order to develop the ability to deal with struggles.
Mm-hmm.
We often think about those individuals who, you know, live life very easily. They don't have any challenges. They don't have any troubles. And what happens is the first time that they experience any type of difficult times or any type of obstacles or anything, they fall and they're not able to get up and they melt down and they can't handle it. And you know, one of the examples that we want to use to illustrate this is, you know, both Dr. Richard and I, we teach at the graduate and undergraduate level at some local universities. And I remember one of the first times that I was teaching, one of my students didn't do so well on a on an assignment. And she earned a lower grade, and we talked about, you know, sort of what the expectation was and what she needed to do. Well, in the next week, I got a phone call from her mother. Now, this was a graduate student.
A college student?
This was a graduate student.
Graduate student.
Yes.
Already completed one college degree.
Right.
Okay.
And I received a phone call from her mother asking me why her daughter earned, why I gave her daughter such a low grade. And, you know, in my mind, you know, the first thing I thought of was this idea of, what are you doing? Why are you calling me? Why are you managing this struggle for your daughter and your adult daughter instead of allowing her to cope with and try to figure out how to manage this issue? And that's what we're doing today. You know, when we talk about helicopter parents and we talk about parents who don't allow their children to experience things, we're putting those children at a disadvantage. We're putting them in a position where they're not going to be able to handle struggles as they reach their teenage years and, of course, into their adult years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I gave a talk at a middle school earlier this week, and this is one of the things that we talked about is, because the parents asked, you know, mm-hmm. how much is too much? These are parents of middle school students. And they said, how much is too much support? And so parents are becoming aware that maybe it's not such a good idea to try to engineer success.
Right.
That kids need the opportunity to succeed and to fail. And one of the points we made there that night was if our children, and the parents readily agreed, if our children are going to fail, let's have inconsequential failures.
Right.
If you're going to fail a class, fail it in middle school or high school, because that failure doesn't stay on your permanent record.
Right.
If you fail a college class, it never goes away.
Right.
It's always on your permanent record. The other thing we want is if children are going to fail, I want my children to fail while I'm there to help them pick up the pieces.
Absolutely.
I don't want them to fail after they leave. So, yeah, I can engineer nothing but success for my children, but they're not going to know how to manage failure when it occurs. And inevitably, it's going to occur.
Right.
But I want to be there when it occurs.
Exactly. And, you know, what we can do as parents is we allow our children those opportunities to struggle, those opportunities to fail.
Right.
And then we work through the process of repair with them.
Right.
You know, using the example of that you were using of failing a course. Well, if you fail a 9 weeks, or fail a quarter for a particular class, then that gives you the opportunity to sit down with your kid and say, okay, what did we do this 9 weeks that didn't
right.
work?
Exactly.
And what can we do the next 9 weeks to prevent it from happening again?
That's what I love about this opportunity at middle school and high school is that if a child fails 1 9 weeks, then, okay, the next 9 weeks you work together to fix whatever was wrong.
Right, yeah. Right. So what we're saying is that the good type of struggle, the type of struggle that we want our children to experience, are those struggles that are somewhat inconsequential, those that aren't going to, you know, we don't want them to fail by getting a bad tattoo, because that's not going to go away.
or a body piercing that gets infected, you know, and you have to have surgery to correct it. You know?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So we want them to fail or to experience those struggles in areas that are repairable, that are non-permanent, that are remedied. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's important that we engineer those times.
Right.
Sometimes we want to create situations. We need to put our children in situations where you need to figure out what mm-hmm. to do to solve this problem.
Right.
Because if I solve every problem for you, it's right. not going to help you at all. Mm-hmm. Another example that we used from the book was from my childhood. You know, we lived in a neighborhood, and just outside of our neighborhood, there was a store. And my mom would send us up to the store every once in a while. We'd just hop on the bike, and it was maybe 3/4 of a mile or so away. And she would give us, well, back then, it was like $1, $2. And we would jump on our bike, and she'd say, go up to the store and get a loaf of bread for dinner. And so, you know, we'd hop on the bike, and we'd run up there. And you get there, and, you know, we always, I don't even remember what kind of bread it was now, but, you know, say it was Merita, you know, we always ate Merita, but if I got to the store and Merida wasn't there. They had sold out of Merida. I now had to make a decision. I had to make a choice. Was I going to buy some other brand?
Right.
Or was I going to run home, ask mom what kind...
Ask mom what to do.
And then go back to the store. I wasn't going to do that. And so I had to problem solve. I was put in a position where I had to struggle. And I had to figure out what I was going to do, what type of bread I was going to get, how I was going to solve this problem. And today, we don't do that. And this is where we get into another one of those other issues. So we had helicopter parenting sort of as one of the first types of issues that we have today that limit kids' abilities to develop resiliency. The other is, believe it or not, it's going to blow your mind that I'm going to say this, is technology. Technology sometimes interferes with our ability to build resilience. Because what happens now is you go to the mom sends you up to the store, and we don't go anywhere without our cell phones.
Right.
And so what happens is you get to the store, they don't have Merida. The first thing that's done is I'm going to call mom, and now mom's going to solve the problem for me.
Right, right.
So what we're relying on these, you know, while it's great to have technology, I'm a huge fan of technology. I love it. But at the same time, that technology is interfering with some of our kids' abilities to problem solve, to figure out how to solve issues.
That happens throughout middle school, high school, and even into college.
Right.
When a generation ago, before cell phones, if a college student had an issue to settle, they had to figure out a way to settle it themselves. They had to solve the problem themselves. Today, they call mom or dad, and the parents provide the solution, even for a college-age student.
Right.
Okay. So once again, we rob children of the opportunity to learn how to solve their own problems.
Right. And it's easy for us to do that because our kids ask us. You know, every once in a while, Connor will come into the kitchen and he'll say, you know, Dad, what should I have for a snack? And I'll say, well, there's this, 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 and this. He goes, yeah, but which one should I have? I'm not going to figure that out for you. Whichever one you want, you know, whichever one you feel good about, that's the one that you have. We just had a comment on Mixlr from Dr. Steve, and she agrees that it's pretty easy to say that we need to do this and to allow our kids to struggle, but sometimes it's really difficult to do because as parents, we don't like to see our kids struggle. We don't like to see our kids go through hard times. We don't like to see our kids put in positions where they're not going to be successful. But it really is in their best interest for many of these situations. And I always find it interesting because a lot of schools, especially high schools and sometimes even middle schools, are really pushing in that direction. And so there are many high schools and even middle schools that really don't even talk to parents anymore.
Right.
If something's going on with the student, they want the student to come to them.
Right.
They want the student to address the issue and figure out how to solve the problem. And they don't want to talk to the parents. They say, you know, let's let him or her deal with it and then go from there. And then if they need us, then they'll seek
us
out.
Which is the way it should be. I would always opt to have my children solve their school problems at school.
Right.
You know, talk to the teachers, talk to the counselors, figure out a solution. You know, if it doesn't work, we can always be a safety net for our kids. But they should always be given the opportunity to solve these problems themselves.
Right. And I think that it's perfectly acceptable to aid our children while they're doing this. So, for example, if your child is having a tough time in one of his classes and he's doesn't know what to do,
right?
You know, it's okay to say, well, why don't you email the teacher and ask them if there's something else that you can do?
Right.
And he'll say, okay. And he'll type out the email and say, how does this look? Mm-hmm. It's perfectly fine as a parent to do that because what you're doing is, I saw this in a post with something that we're going to be talking about later. We're dealing with the zone of proximal development and scaffolding. Vygotsky, remember he used to talk about all that.
Yes.
I love his work. And Vygotsky talked about, you know, you have to see where the kids' skills are and help them go from where their skills are to the next level of skills. They're not going to be able to make that jump by themselves. They're going to need, and our support helps them.
Right.
So, it's great for us as parents to help in that way. You're not going to write the email for him, but you're going to give him the support that he needs to make sure that he communicates what he needs to communicate.
Right, right.
So when we're thinking about this, you know, we have to be careful that we're not being overly involved parents. We have to make sure that we're not being too intrusive as parents. We have to allow our children to experience some of these things. And again, sometimes we have to put ourselves, our kids in positions where they have to deal with struggles, where they have to deal with problems so that they can develop the skills to mm-hmm. overcome them themselves.
Right.
That's one of the reasons why I think youth sports is so important. Mm-hmm. When they're on the team, they have to cope with the social, emotional, physical demands of being on a team, and they have to deal with that. You can't be out on the field with them to help them cope right. with that. So that's why those kinds of experiences are so important in childhood. So now we've said this a couple of times now, and so maybe we should give a couple of examples, Richard, of how a parent can create some of these opportunities for their kids.
Right.
How can we, as parents, put our children in situations where they're going to build resiliency? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think one of them is what we were just talking about, and that's youth sports.
Youth sports.
Youth sports is a great right. way because, again, it's putting them in a social situation where they're going to be where they're going to have to meet not only their own personal needs, but the needs of teammates, the needs of a coach, mm-hmm. The needs of other people. And they have to navigate that because that's not always a smooth, easy thing to do. They have to navigate that themselves.
Right. And I think what we advise parents to do is you have to think about this. What we're talking about is we talk about becoming attached to our children, attachment theory. And that's an important concept in child development, if a child doesn't attach to a nurturing parent, they can develop a condition called reactive attachment disorder, which is a serious psychological condition. So initially, we want parents to develop attachment parenting. That's the goal with young children. But at some point along the way, and it's usually toward late elementary school and into middle school, we now want parents to develop detachment parenting. We want them to begin to withdraw from their children's lives so that the children take on more of the responsibility. We never want to give them more than they can handle, but we want to give them everything that they can handle.
Right.
So if you go back and you have very young children, there are challenges you can give to even a five-year-old. For example, a child at the age of five should be able to clean up his or her own messes.
Right? Right.
But you have to present those challenges to kids. If you want them to learn how to clean, they have to be given the opportunity. Many parents will say, well, the kids don't do it right. I want it to be cleaner than, well, that's fine. But you have to make a choice between, do you want a perfectly clean house or do you want to teach your kids how to learn how to do it themselves, whether
right.
it's run the vacuum or dust or whatever. So at each developmental stage, when they get to elementary school, at some point they need to learn how to do their own homework. That's a skill that they should learn how to do during elementary school. And if they don't do it and they go to school and they get a zero on an assignment, that's a lesson to learn. The worst thing a parent can do is go in and rescue the child because you don't ever want your child to get a zero. No, the parent should let the child have to deal with the teacher and deal with the homework situation because that's the time. By the time they leave elementary school, they should have a firmly established habit of turning in their homework at a regular time.
Right.
And there are similar ways to do it in middle school and high school and beyond. But you have to start letting your kids deal with these challenges on their own.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Because I liked what you said when, you know, sometimes it's just easier for us to do it ourselves.
It is. It's easier for me to talk to the teacher.
Right.
But it doesn't do my child any good. It's easier for me to clean the house because I'll get it the way I want it to be done. Doesn't help my child learn anything.
Right. I remember when my stepdaughter first went to college and she had friends in her dorm mm-hmm. that had no idea how to use the washing machine.
Right. Right.
They had no idea how to wash their clothes.
Right.
And so, yes, if you want it done the perfectly right way that you want it done, if you want it done quickly, you're going to have to do it yourself.
Right.
But is that teaching your kids anything?
That's right.
Is that preparing them for where they need to be and who they need to be as they reach adulthood?
Right.
And often it doesn't.
Right.
When we take care of everything, it doesn't meet those needs that they have.
Of course, we're better at all of these things than our kids are, but our kids must be given the opportunity. It's our obligation as a parent to give our children the opportunity to learn how to do these things, to handle their failures, to handle their shortcomings, and to learn how to succeed.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Now, another area that I think is important that kids learn to manage on their own is their academics, is their school stuff. And this is where we're going to have a little bit more of a discussion, only because there are some things in education that they can handle and some things in education that we need to handle.
Right.
And we're going to talk a lot more about this over the coming weeks in this other podcast that we're talking about and that we'll tell you more about in just a few minutes. But we talked about helicopter parenting. We talked about technology as things that limit resiliency. The other thing is too many bad struggles. All right, so we talked about the good struggles. Too many bad struggles limit resiliency. Mm-hmm. Remember, there's a writer named Martin Seligman, and he wrote about this fantastic concept of learned helplessness.
Right.
And what he talked about, and this was born out of some of the animal research.
Right.
And what they found is that if an animal, and it translates to humans as well, is punished too much, and they realize that there's no escape, they succumb to the punishment and just accept it, and do not even struggle against the problem anymore.
Mm-hmm.
What Martin Seligman did that was sort of first, he was sort of the first person to do this, is he took that animal research and he applied it to school-age children. And what he looked at was students who, usually poor students, inner city students, who were consistently put down from the perspective of academics, from grades, from the lack of optimism that they're going to become anything, they saw that these children developed this learned helplessness. And it basically said they can't do anything to change their situation.
Right.
They developed this external locus of control where they said, I can't do anything, to protect myself or to help me. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to give in to the fate that I'm not going to be able to do anything about these challenges.
That's right. Repeated failure, repeated punishment, repeated criticism over and over and over again creates in children what it creates in laboratory animals: learned helplessness.
Right.
I can't do anything about it, so I might as well not even try.
Right. Okay. Right. Mm-hmm. And that is the opposite of resilience.
Right.
We want people to look at a problem and say, I can solve that problem. I can find a way to solve that problem.
There must be a way to solve this problem.
Right.
Right.
And that's what I loved so much, not to do movie talk, but that's what I loved so much about the movie The Martian. You know, I won't do any spoiler alerts, but, you know, he solved problems. He was in a situation that looked as though there were no solutions, that looked as though it was dire, that there was no way he was going to make it. But he used a variety of problem-solving skills, and he solved the problems. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing when you're building resilience. And what we're talking about with this learned helplessness, that kids who are in these situations where they repeatedly fail because there's not the supports that they need, because they're being asked to do things that is impossible for them to do,
right.
They give up. And when they give up, they don't develop the resiliency they need to be successful as adults.
Right, right. So there are I think I know where you're headed with this. So there are situations, there are circumstances that children get into where they are going to get in over their head.
Right.
They are going to fail, and it's not possible for them to come up with a solution.
Right.
That they're going to be in so deeply they're going to be in so deep that they're not going to be able to figure out a solution to this problem.
Right.
When that happens, we start to move toward learned helplessness.
Right.
So we want to avoid that as well.
Right.
Okay.
Parents have to be involved in those situations.
You have to be aware. You have to be involved. But if your child starts to get into these situations, then it's time to intervene.
Right.
Okay.
And we'll just use a quick example for this, because I think examples help point this out a little bit. And that is standardized testing.
Standardized testing.
All right. So when we think about this situation, we've been talking to lots and lots of people about the issue with standardized testing.
Right.
Not even standardized testing, high stakes testing.
The high stakes kind of testing.
The FSA test here in Florida, the end of year exams, the end of course exams. Wow, there's so many different ones now. It's unbelievable. But, you know, when we've heard from teachers who talk about their students and say from day one, their students are already saying, there's no reason for me to do anything in this class because I'm going to fail the test anyways. Mm-hmm. And so they don't try.
Right.
They don't put forth any effort. No matter what the teacher does, the students aren't putting forth any effort because the students know that the material is already too tough for them because they're taking a course that if it wasn't required for graduation, they wouldn't be taking anyways. The material is written at a level that's over their heads anyways because...
Right.
You know, whether you have a learning disability, whether you're mildly mentally or intellectually disabled, or you're a gifted student, you're having to learn the same material because you're taking the same test. And so these students know, or at least believe, that there's no way that they're going to pass these tests, so why should they try?
Right.
And that is the essence of Martin Seligman's learned helplessness.
Mm-hmm.
And that is happening... You know, for those of you listening here in Florida, that's happening in the school that's closest to you, wherever you are right now. It happens in every school, and it's happening every day. And it's most prevalent in high schools because those students are old enough to sort of recognize some of these things. But it's present in third graders as well. You know, we met third graders the first day of school. They come in already distressed because this is the FSA year.
This is my FSA year.
Mm-hmm. So they're already anxious and tore up about it.
Right.
And, you know, it's terrible that we're putting our kids in these situations. And again, there is nothing that the kids can do about it. There is no way that they can problem solve themselves out of this issue. So we as parents have to be involved. We as parents have to take some steps to deal with that. And there's a variety of ways to do that, but it's just an example of how we have to make sure that the struggles that our kids experience are the good kinds of struggles and not those kinds of destructive struggles that's going to impair them and limit their abilities in the future.
Right. Yeah, in a way, in a very real sense, we are all... we are all victims of learned helplessness when it comes to standardized tests, because most of us, because they are now state and federally mandated,
right?
None of us have any control over it.
Right.
So we can't do anything about it, whether they're accurate or inaccurate or valid or not valid, whether they measure what they're supposed to be measuring. We meaning parents, teachers, and students, and even school administrators, don't have any ability to do anything about it. So in a sense, we're all victims of learned helplessness when it comes to standardized tests.
Right. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we're going to talk about here in just a few minutes, when we wrap up this podcast and kind of talk about some of our other exciting announcements, is that there are some new movements that are empowering parents a little bit, like the opt-out movement.
Mm-hmm.
That's starting to bring and give parents and students some hope that, okay, it's not as dire because I'm not doing it by myself. There's hundreds and thousands of other students sort of in the same situation that will be able to, that I'll be able to stand with. And so it won't be just me against this monster that is the education system. It's us, and that brings power. And what does that develop? resilience.
Right.
That makes you, that helps you get, helps give you confidence that yes, there is a solution, and yes, we can find the solution together mm-hmm. to solve these problems.
Right. And that's, again, that's parents leading by example, saying that no, we cannot tolerate this anymore, and there is a solution. Because for a long time, none of us had a choice. We didn't have a solution for this problem. We knew that it was destructive to our children, that high stakes testing was destructive to our kids. It made them anxious. It made them nervous. Those of us in the business of education read the data, and we know that the whole high stakes testing movement has been an absolute failure.
Right.
It's not leading to any of the improvements that we had anticipated. But none of us could do anything about it.
Right.
Now we are beginning to develop some solutions, some possible solutions to the problem of high-stakes testing. One of them is the opt-out movement.
Right,
yep.
Right. So, you know, again, that is, we're going to be doing a lot of podcasts in the near future that focus on that issue. But just, again, returning it back to the idea of resilience is that, you know, the way that we allow, the things that we allow our kids to be exposed to are either going to help them grow or it's going to restrict their growth.
Right.
And we need to make sure that we expose them to things that's going to foster development, that's going to foster healthy growth, healthy emotional and social development, so that they are more likely to succeed as they're reaching adulthood. And when we as parents see them in winless situations,
right,
like with the school testing, that's when we need to step in, and that's the ones that we need to help fight with them.
Right.
Not because they made an F on a paper or because they made an F on a test.
That's stuff they should deal with themselves.
They should deal with that
between
themselves.
That's between the child and the
exactly.
teacher. Right.
Exactly.
But when the system conspires against you,
right,
and children are put in a learned helplessness situation, then parents have to intervene, and they have to intervene aggressively,
right,
or at least assertively.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, one last area that I think we should mention and talk about, because this has also been in the news, was in the news a couple of months ago, and that is the idea of the type of rewards that we give our kids. And again, this is related to resiliency, and it's related to, it's related to youth sports. And when we think about participation trophies.
Oh, yes. Participation trophies.
That was in the news.
I never got a participation trophy.
Me neither.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
Oh, so it's, I thought it was just because I was old. But yeah, there was no such thing as participation trophies.
Right. No, first
not
place got a trophy,
either.
Second place got a smaller trophy, and then everybody else was like, let's work
come
hard and try to get
year.
There next year.
Right.
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 Now, and so we want to be sort of clear.
I thought you were a participation trophy kind of guy.
No, I was a first place trophy guy.
Oh, that's right. I forget.
No, the idea of participation trophies, again, I think is derived from a good position, from a good place. You know, let's reward kids for their effort.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's great at certain developmental stages. As kids get older, like I'm coaching a group of 4-year-olds right now in soccer.
And they don't care if they win or lose.
They don't care if
kids at that age. Well, your team probably does.
Well, it's not that they care if they win or lose. It's just they don't know if they win or lose. So if you say, hey, you guys won, right, they say they won.
Well, kids at that age do things to have fun.
Right.
For them, it's play.
Exactly. Okay?
And they're not as concerned. They don't understand the concept of winning or losing yet.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And at that stage, the motivation is to get them out to continue
to
play.
Right.
So in that sense, participation trophies make sense.
Could, okay.
It's not going to hurt at
right.
4 or 5, maybe 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But as you're getting up into school age kids,
right,
now we're getting into a situation where kids know that they have some idea of hierarchy. You know, if we even think about it from a developmental perspective, it's not until you're in maybe late kindergarten, early first grade, where you understand that 2 is more than 1.
Right.
And you can put things in a sequential
order.
Serial.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're thinking about participation trophies at an age where they understand first place is the best, then second place, third place, and so on, right. For everybody to get exactly the same trophy takes away the importance of working hard to be the best.
Right.
And obviously, everybody can't be the best. But what is your drive to be the best, to get better, if you're going to get the same reward that everybody else gets?
Right.
So you're taking away some of that motivation to work hard. So if you tying this to resilience, if you lose games, what is your motivation? What is the drive to develop the resilience you need to come back next week and work hard again?
Right.
Instead, what we see and what I see when I work with older kids out on the soccer field, what I see is they don't care if they come to practice or not, because mm-hmm. everything is going to be the same anyways. They'll get mm-hmm. the same medal or the same trophy. It doesn't hold value to them because, it doesn't have any meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do have to be cautious about how we deal with participation trophies. I think that it's a slippery slope when we're trying to balance between let's give them something to encourage them to come back next year versus we need to do something to recognize that this person or this group worked really hard all season long to be first place.
Right, right. And that if you want to be performing at that level, you have to work harder than you're working right now.
Right.
It is achievable, but you have to work harder.
Right.
And that's the message you want to give to students after age 8 or 9 or 10, and particularly in middle school and high school. You have to work harder.
Right. Okay. Right. Because again, what is the first thing that happens when you've gotten participation trophies all of your life?
Right.
Or even if we think about participation trophies from the perspective of in elementary schools, when you go to awards day and every student gets some type of award.
Right.
Well, it doesn't give you anything to work towards.
Right.
It doesn't build your ability to say, you know what, I wasn't good enough this time, but I can work hard and be good enough next time.
Right.
That's resilience. Mm-hmm. That is building a sense of confidence and a sense of self-esteem that's going to allow them to handle the fact that they weren't good enough now, but they can be.
Mm-hmm.
Because what's going to happen when they're an adult mm-hmm. and they've been at a job for a year and they get a performance review and they don't qualify for a raise?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You don't get a participation point at that place.
Get a participation raise.
Right. That doesn't exist. And so how are you going to be able to handle that? What do you mean? I've worked here for a year. I should just get a raise because I should get a raise.
Well, I think it's happening in some of our colleges and universities where students believe that you begin to get into the mindset, well, I did the assignment,
right,
so I should get an A. Well, we don't do participation trophies.
Right.
A means you did a superior, your work is at a superior level.
Right.
That's what gets you an A. It's not just because you came to class and did the assignment.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
So it does develop a mindset.
Right. So we have to be cognizant of that as parents and teachers and coaches and things like that. We have to be aware that, there is a lot of value that comes from, avoiding the temptation mm-hmm. of participation trophies and just awarding everybody for the same way because they gave quote unquote effort.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Certainly there's some subjectivity to how much effort you gave.
There was a story not long ago in one of the business journals about we used to have employee of the year
mm-hmm.
and then we had employee of the month.
Right.
And then it got down to employee of the week because you have to keep rewarding these participation trophies. So the adult analog of the participation trophy is we name somebody every week, maybe every day, employee
right.
of the day, because everybody has to get rewarded for being here.
Right.
Not everybody needs to be rewarded.
Right.
Okay. So, because you have to learn that there's another level of expectation,
right.
and you should be working to achieve that.
Right, right. So,
at the same time, it has to be an achievable goal.
Right.
Otherwise, you get into learned helplessness.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
So you're on that little balance beam of we don't want to go to learned helplessness, but we don't want to go to participation trophies.
Right.
There is this balance that we have to maintain. That's where parents come in.
Right.
Parents have to be monitoring this.
Right.
You know, their kids have to be able to succeed.
Right. And so you know, and an easy way to do that is, you know, your kid has a game that day and their team loses. Well, they don't get the win. They don't get the quote unquote trophy for that day. But if your kid worked really hard and played really well, after the game you say, "Man, you played your heart out there. I love watching you play. Let's go get a special treat or something. Let's go get a milkshake or something after the game, because you're rewarding. That's when you reward their effort.
Right. You reward effort. Right.
That's when you reward that. You don't reward that at the end with this big ceremony that equates your position in the standings with another team's position in the standing, right, even though they're, you know, three or four positions apart.
You know, I have another analogy. A friend of mine spends part of his time in Europe, and he happens to be a musician, and he made the comment that European musicians get jobs for life. You know, they don't have to keep getting better and better and better. And one of the first things he noticed is that the most creative musicians are in the United States, because they have to continue getting better.
Right.
Because there's no guarantee. So
right,
they have to keep producing, and they have to keep writing, and they have to keep becoming more and more creative. Whereas in countries where there's a guaranteed job, they play the same music technically very well,
right,
but they're not producing anything new.
Right.
Whereas in our country, he said the most creative music being produced is in the United States, because they have to be.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's great to, you know, help our kids, again, put our kids in situations where, yes, each day we expect more and more from you. But all of those expectations are achievable. All those
right,
expectations are realistic. And when you don't have the skills to meet those expectations, we're going to provide the support, not the answers, the support that you need to get to accomplish that.
Right.
And that, you know, as simple or difficult or however that sounds to you, that really is the key to building resilience. That really is what it's all about.
Learning how to manage disappointment, learning how to manage failure, learning how to manage your own shortcomings.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And with that, hopefully it's not too far of a stretch for you to see that with building resilience in that way, you also build self-esteem, you build confidence, you build self-reliance. You know that there's not a situation that you could be put in that you couldn't solve the issue, solve the problem.
Yeah, as you think about your children, you know, by the time your kids reach their teenage years, there should be something in them, some kernel in them, that, okay, this is another set. Okay, you've suffered a setback, you failed a test, you didn't make the squad, you got cut from, you know, you experienced some disappointment. And if the child, I think you could measure your parental success if your child would come to you and say, okay, I've fallen short again, this is what I'm going to do about it.
Right.
You know, if they could get, rather than saying, I didn't make it, and they fall apart.
Right.
Okay. I'd love for my kids to come to me and say, I fell short, this is what I'm going to do about it. What do you think?
Exactly.
Wow,
exactly.
That would be a real milestone in parenting if you could get your kids there.
Right. Right. Exactly. And that should be our goal, because that's when you will have confidence that when, you know, after graduation, high school graduation, you know that they're going to go out and they're going to be able to handle things and they're going to be able to manage their position.
For a kid to, I'd love for a teenager to say, I've been here before. I know what to do.
Right.
You got to pick up the pieces and keep going. I'd love for any teenager to say that.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, I'm disappointed, but I know what to do, and I know I can do it.
Right. Wow. Right. So, and we get to that place with these things that we've talked about, with
It doesn't happen accidentally. That's right. What we should be engineering. If you want to be a helicopter parent, become a helicopter parent who can detach from your kids and let them do it themselves.
Right.
You know, do your helicopter parenting early, but give them an opportunity to learn these skills on their own.
Right, right. Absolutely. So good luck. As you're working on that, you know, please write to us or let us know if you have any questions or if you need any help with any of that. We're always here to and available to help with that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Before we wrap up, yes, we have some announcements and some exciting things coming up. The first is here in our office in South Lakeland, we're going to have a free mental health screening day on November 10th. You can come in anytime between 10 o'clock or 8 o'clock in the morning and 5 o'clock in the evening, anytime during those hours, and meet with one of us for about 15 minutes or so. We'll run through a few questionnaires with you and talk to you for a few minutes and see if that's a Tuesday. To see if anything's going on, if you need any help with anything, if you need any support with anything. And we'll talk to you about anything that we can do to provide some support for you as you're dealing with or if you're struggling with any of those things. So that's going to be Tuesday, November 10th. Again, anytime between 8 in the morning and 5 in the afternoon. So that'll be great. I'm looking forward to that.
Right.
I hope a lot of people come because, you know, we know the statistics. Mm-hmm. We know that there's a lot of people out there with mental health issues that could use some support that maybe are anxious about that first hour-long session that they would have with a therapist or with a psychologist or something. And this is a great way to sort of ease into it if you want to take that opportunity. The second announcement is just 3 days after that mental health screening day on November 13th, Dr. Richard and I are doing a workshop on medications called Medication Myths and Misperceptions. Mm-hmm. That workshop is going to be held in Bartow. For those of you who are licensed mental health professionals, a lot of licensed mental health counselors, licensed clinical social workers, or licensed marriage and family therapists, we're offering 3 CEUs for that. You can get information from that at our website at PACFlorida, that's PACFlorida.com/workshops. I don't think it will work if you just type that in. You have to type .html at the end. So if you just go to PACFlorida.com and click on the workshops tab, you'll find it. It's from 8 in the morning until 11 in the morning. And so there's 3 hours there. You'll get CEU credits. If you're a teacher and you're interested in that workshop, because we will be... What our plan is we're going to go through the 4 broad categories of medications. We're going to talk about what they're intended for, some of the side effects, common side effects that we see with it, and some other myths about those medications. What do they do? What do they not do? That type of thing. We're going to go through the stimulants, antidepressants, anti-anxiety medications, the antidepressants and mood stabilizers, anti-anxiety medications, and even the antipsychotic medications, because they're being used more and more in adults and children.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I'm excited about that workshop. A lot of people have been talking about it. We've already had some people register. So jump on the website at PACFlorida.com, click on workshops, and register.
Yeah, I'm excited about that because we're going to talk about how medications actually work in the brain. And it'll be a very simple explanation of how they work.
Right.
And then we'll talk about the various medications that are prescribed, both therapeutic effects and side effects.
Absolutely.
So I think it's a real good introduction. If you have any interest at all, please join us that morning. Those are fun times. There are lots of time for questions, and it's interactive and informal.
Right.
So come and join us. I think you'll find it beneficial and enjoyable.
Yeah, it's great. The last couple that we've done, we've had some teachers and parents there, and we're able to have a very real conversation about
some
real
lively
situations. And
some lively discussions, and people got their questions answered. So, and we always make time to have that kind of a discussion. So, yeah, join us.
Exactly. And our last announcement is one of our bigger announcements. I'm very excited about it. And that is the start of our new podcast. We're starting a new podcast because we started the Mental Breakdown with the goal of obviously breaking down mental health issues, mental health concerns, and presenting it in a way that's easily understood, that you know, you can take and digest yourself, and you can understand it, and you can implement it at home and every day, like with our resiliency talk today. What we've found is that we spend a lot of time talking about education because there, you know, especially when you're talking about child mental health, there's a great overlap between mental health issues and issues in the school system. And so what we've decided to do is we have broken off that part of our podcast, and we've started, we'll still have the mental breakdown where we'll talk about mental health issues and parenting and those kinds of things. But now we're going to start a new podcast called the Paideia Education Podcast. If you go to iTunes and type in Paideia, P-A-E-D-E-I-A. If you go into Mixlr and type in Paideia, P-A-E-D-E-I-A, you will find us in both places. We'll be doing Mixlr just like we're doing it with the Mental Breakdown. And you'll find the podcast on iTunes. If you just type in Paideia there in the search engine. And we are going to be talking all about education there. It'll still be a weekly broadcast where we talk about different educational issues. I'm so looking forward to getting that started. We have one podcast already posted there, but that was a repost from one of our Mental Breakdown podcasts that we talked about school reform. But we're going to be recording a live podcast for Paideia this weekend, so that parents and teachers can all be available and hopefully listen to it. I'm very excited because we're going to have a guest. I don't know if we'll have her this weekend or if it'll be next week, but a teacher who recently resigned from a position here in Polk County Schools has agreed to come onto the podcast and sort of talk about her experiences. And we're going to talk a lot about the opt-out movement here in Florida in general, but also here in Polk County. I'm so excited about it.
Yeah, I am too. We've had this, what has been termed this reform movement in education, started in the 1990s and sort of reached its peak with No Child Left Behind in 2001. And that you know, shoved schools into a very different kind of direction. And we've now, after 15 years of No Child Left Behind, are beginning to question what we've done, where we have taken education, and now where it should be going. And so there is a sort of a vibrant discussion beginning to occur about, even at the federal level, certainly at the state and local level, about this whole issue of high stakes and standardized testing. So it's an exciting time, and I think an important time, because there are going to be some important education policy issues made in the next year or two. And we want to try to keep you informed about those and up to date about what is going on in the field of education generally, but specifically with high stakes testing.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that it's time. We just have to do it.
Time to go. Right.
We have to talk about this stuff. We have to get more people talking about this. And you know, I did a quick search on iTunes as we were developing the idea for Paideia, and there's not any podcast. There's very few, if any, podcasts out there that really touch about these issues.
Right.
There's a couple that sort of hit it on the periphery, but there's none that are really directly focused on some of these issues. And so we hope to fill that space and get your voice out there. So please follow
it. That.
Yeah. Join in on the conversation. Again, just go to iTunes and type in Paideia, P-A-E-D-E-I-A. And you'll find us there and subscribe. Write comments, both at the Mental Breakdown and at Paideia. That's how people find out about us. That's how we can get the discussions about whether it's mental health issues or educational issues. That's how we can get it broaden the range of people that we reach, so more and more people can join in on the conversation and more people can be involved in creating some change with this. Somebody asked me that question the other day. They said, you know, when it comes to all these problems, what's going to make anything change?
Right.
And it's going to change by us getting more people involved, by us talking about it, and then putting some things in action that's going to create that change that we need. So, so it's important. So we encourage you to check it out, to subscribe, and again, to comment on iTunes and on our podcast.
And subscriptions are free.
And subscriptions are free. Yeah, right. Absolutely. So
come aboard.
Yes. So, all right. Well, with that, anything else from?
That's it.
All right. So until next time, I'm Dr. Bernie.
And I'm Dr. Richard.
And our next podcast will be through Paydia. So check us out.
Stay tuned.
It's going to be exciting. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to The Mental Breakdown. If you want more information, you can check out our website at www.pacflorida.com. The Mental Breakdown is sponsored in part by theledger.com, where you can read our weekly column in the Life section. Our podcasts are available for download on iTunes, and you can follow us on our YouTube channel and Facebook. We would love to hear from you, so feel free to send us messages either through our website or on Facebook. You can send us questions or topics you would like for us to address on future podcasts. Drs. Bernie and Richard are available for workshops, so you can contact us for more information. Thank you for listening, and until next time, stay mentally healthy.